Hi, I'm Claire Morrow. I began doing elder care work when my own parents started to falter and needed help, but I live very far away. In the beginning, I was trying to reach out to them and manage their situation. Even though I did have a sister who lived much closer, I was concerned, I wanted to help, and I was kind of making myself crazy because I didn't live nearby and it was very hard to do anything. But I'm an action-oriented person. If I see a problem, I like to think of a way to address it and go ahead and do that. And so I realized after I'd visited my parents and my dad was in a rehab for a stroke at the time, that there were problems that all elderly people or people who were becoming older were having with coping with the next phase of their lives. And because I had a counseling background and a programming outreach background, I began to work with my local elder services because I thought I can't always be there to help my parents, but I can help other people who are dealing with these problems. And that gave me a sense of purpose. And that's how I got into the industry.
Now, everyone within the community at every level, from healthy living to assisted living to dementia care and hospice, every single person in the chain becomes, has to be protected in a way that maybe they hadn't considered before as an employee. Mm-hmm. So I think people will rethink their employment in that light.
Your own internal motivation to do purposeful work is certainly being fulfilled at a high level because you can see how serious the situation is. And when a sick individual is placed in front of you, you know you need to respond. So your intrinsic need is being met on an everyday basis. And then when the sick patients increase, when the number of distressed people in your life increases, then you have to keep going to meet the response. But everyone has a point of exhaustion if you don't have the mental and physical strength to keep going because you haven't had a break or you haven't had decent food or you didn't get enough sleep. No one's getting enough sleep right now anywhere, I don't think. And so we're still doing our best because our bodies have been trained to respond to the work, the situation of work. If you put yourself into the place of work, you know what to do, so you naturally do it. But it's enough to cause sort of a crisis of decision because you have a home life, and now that home life is being threatened by your job. And I think that's an extraordinary and difficult place that first responders of any kind live with. But now it feels more and more like we all have to live with that duality in everyday life. And that question of how to survive the dual pull for purpose and safety is really kind of overwhelming for everyone. So the ability, your training as a first responder and healthcare workers now become that, is supposed to override that. And there are plenty of protocols for dealing with fear so that you can get your job done, as we know. But it becomes even more stressful as this situation is prolonged because it's already very unusual. not many of us go into battle in quite this way. And even first responders on all sorts of levels deal with something usually that is in progress and has an end point. And now we don't know where the end point is because the disease will progress across the country as it continues its way around the globe. And so there is an endless possibility of dealing with this as a real situation. So how long can people go on? That's the part that is an evolving understanding. So I don't know that there are complete answers to that question of, will someone who's made this caregiving activity their life's work, will they persist in it? I think depending on the level of care that they're delivering, your sense of purpose can certainly be heightened and fulfilled, and your emotional involvement in the outcome may be part of that. I think that for most people, it's impossible to completely separate the emotional from the practical realities. One does not necessarily intrude on the other. And so in your downtime, you may feel more emotionally open to your emotional process. And as we know, we review our own good times and bad times. So for every person who spent the day caregiving, there will be good moments and there will be bad moments. And depending on, it's wise to mourn the bad moments, but also celebrate the good ones, the moments that you notice that are positive. For people who are there just to provide, like say, for example, in a community living situation, your job is to provide social interaction for community members so that nursing aides can focus on delivering care, then your need is to be a reassuring presence, to engage and distract people. And you know that you're doing something important, not just for the individual who will feel less socially isolated, but they will also, but that your effort is also making it possible for someone else with a different skill to get their job done. So you're needed by your patient and your colleague. You're part of a team effort in that situation. So even though a hospitality aide is perhaps a lower level tier employee, they're just as important as the nursing aide, the nurse professional, and the physicians who may be part of a facility team. Inner strength comes from your core self, I believe. And so the work that we do as individuals, as we grow in our lives, cementing that core self into the place you go when you're alone, whatever situation that may be for anyone, the place that is still and where you feel safe, you, as you grow as a person, you take that with you everywhere. And so it's always a part of you. Staying in touch with your inner strength is something that is another form of practice that you can cultivate through meditation, through serving your true nature by giving yourself stillness when you need it, finding comfort in gathering with others when you need it, all of those family related things that are positive for you. Every one of the positive interactions that cultivate your stillness, your sense of purpose, and your inner resolve, they stay with you and they're there to get back in touch with no matter what you endure in life. It's just a question of how much we are distracted from that and how we train ourselves. And I don't mean to minimize it by saying it's just a matter of, because it's not easy to find it in small moments when we're under super stress. And that's why I think that what we see now on social media is so positive and uplifting, like a group of nurses taking time out together to just like move their bodies to music, to take a, you know, as part of their break time, to be in touch with not only their intellectual response, but also to their physical presence and connecting with their with their feet on the ground, literally, that can help you go forward again. So I think, you know, mentally, spiritually, those are all aspects of how to get in touch with that core of yourself. Sometimes prayer can mean a lot, and it doesn't have to be in a group, but just communing with your spirituality and finding a moment to do that is really helpful. Like I find a lot of solace in poetry as opposed to prayer, but the prayers I learned as a child, if I say those words, they give me comfort. The same as, you know, if I read a profound poem, that gives me comfort. If I hear a familiar song, this is why music on, you know, on the internet right now, in social media, all these ways that people are reaching out to music, your mind can snap into a familiar place of mental flow that helps you reconnect with your inner core just for a few minutes. And then you can get back to the logical side of your mind where you have to function. And that revisiting your inner core is like another friend that is always with you. So I think that's really important to maintain that passageway of contact with that inner core.
Cool. How do you think the elder care industry will change because of coronavirus?
Well, within the industry of elder care, now is a time of really reacting and reassessing, and it's hard for me to look at it in terms of implications for the future in a profit-making mode. But I feel like from a compassionate community point of view, people hopefully will recognize that the way we treat people at every age is important. And when you see that the industry is responding by adding jobs, that is a positive thing, because perhaps the calculation of caregivers to number of patients is changing. Maybe they see that in times of crisis, their numbers are not up to the task, and that actually the value of their clientele should be recognized with a greater proportion of employees to give attention as needed. I mean, I'm not sure how to answer that right now, because I think that in response to crisis, you have to separate. I mean, of course, these places need to continue to run, and so they need to be maintained. But at what level of maintenance? That's always the question, because there are varying levels of care and valuing. There are various levels of service, and if service equates a higher level of service means more personalized care, then down the line there are people who are being neglected. And in a time of crisis, if people are being neglected, their symptoms are being overlooked, and they're going to die. So how, you know, what is our humanitarian instinct? How much will we put the value of life over profit? That's impossible to say. And, you know, what's living old enough? These are hard questions that everybody has. The emotional toll of not being able to be with your loved one at a time of crisis is really difficult in the elder care field in general. But now it's heightened because people of all levels are going into crisis with professionals and no family members available. So these are questions of our ultimate humanity, I believe, and show the value of whoever might be on hand to honor a person at the time of their death, or in their great need as of illness. And that might be, you know, the person who came in to mop the floor. We don't know. I've seen a lot of people in interviews talk about their preoccupation with a level of equipment that they have to support their team staff. And that certainly is one way that managers in general, you know, if you don't give your employees the proper tools to do their job, they can't do a good job, and no one can feel positive about the outcome under those circumstances. Imposing rules that don't feel comfortable to the employees, because you have to ration the equipment, is a difficult place for people to be. And the act of management is also often about making hard decisions. So it's not easy in this place to be on either side as a staff member or as an administrator. And in fact, in elder care and healthcare in general, a lot of administrators are also being prepared to be staff, or they might be returning to jobs they had formerly, or they may just be pressed into service as paraprofessionals in a different way. So I think showing your solidarity with your team is number one. And as organizations, being supportive and not penalizing people is another. But, you know, if you need to have staff and people refuse to come in, then that's a difficult situation. And as far as you know, what post-crisis aid they may be able to provide to their employees who are profoundly affected by this experience, that's a challenge they will have to meet down the road.
Cool. Are there any innovative measures that you've seen being taken at this time, or no? Like in that industry, obviously.
Personally, I have not. I'm on the outside looking in right now, so I can't say. But for a fact, it depends. Communities that are connected to networks of technology may be faring better because they have the ability to create their own resources through extended affiliations, like 3D printing of equipment. But if you're in a more rural or less more isolated in your service, then you're at more of a mercy to a general supply chain on all sorts of goods and services. So having a network of a solid healthcare network that encompasses more than just one facility seems like it might end up to be a situation that is better able to handle crises like these when they arise. Because this will not be an isolated incident. What I've seen are certainly communities responding. And we don't know how widespread this is, but in situations of areas where there's an acute crisis, we also see that people from the community who are staying at a social distance are expressing themselves in any way they can, with applause, with singing, with donations to organizations that provide support. And are they being directed? I don't think it's possible for everyone to know where people are going and in what role they play, but certainly in healthcare, people have a certain type of uniform that they wear when they're off to work, and that makes them recognizable. And to the extent that their neighborhood might understand what they're going into on a daily basis, I do believe they're getting that recognition. I think if you're a private elder care worker and a family relies on you and you're trying to get there every day because you need the pay on an individual basis, you know, hopefully that family is recognizing your effort. And if your community, you know, if you don't have an employment structure that encourages you on a regular basis or recognizes your effort, then, you know, hopefully outside your immediate work realm, the people around you are giving you recognition for that and understanding that your sacrifice may be for your family's livelihood or for the comfort and care of the people in your charge, and probably both. It's just such a hard time to think, to try to provide a drop in the bucket of support and encouragement and advocacy for people who often feel they're doing a thankless job. I just want to add my thanks to all of those others who are saying thank you right now.